Please be seated. Thank you for your patience. We are ready to hear the last case on our calendar this morning in the matter of the welfare of a child of SMH and DJB parents. It's my understanding that the only appellant in this case is SMH. And who is representing mother?
Your Honor, Jennifer Thompson.
Thank you. And who's appearing for the county?
Morning, Your Honor. Travis Rolene, Assistant Lissauer County Attorney.
Thank you. Ready for arguments? Each side will have 15 minutes. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal argument. Would each of you be kind enough to state your name for the record before each leg of your argument so we have the voice identified on the oral recording that's been made?
Of course.
The timing clock, as you see, is over here. Please be mindful of the time, and appellant's counsel may approach the podium and present your argument.
Good morning, counsel, gallery. May I please report? My name is Jennifer. I represent the appellant, SMH. This matter is an appeal of termination of parental rights in Lissauer County. As the court is well aware, three factors must be met for termination of parental rights: the meeting of statutory basis, time in the best interest, and that the agency may be involved. In this matter, I'd like to start with the open best interest being paramount. That the court, the district court, abused its discretion in finding the best interest of the child that appellant's right to be terminated. Appellant had consistent supervisory with the child throughout the pendency of the underlying matter, as well as throughout the permanency matter. She had a, I will argue later, a lack of reasonable efforts by the agency to support her mental health, as well as a, I would argue, somewhat specious mental health evaluation of the child. These things led to the district court's best interest finding. And the reason I start with best interest is because they then lead to the reasonable efforts finding at the district court, which was also an abuse of discretion in that the agency acknowledged that it failed to provide a recommended trauma-informed therapy to the appellant until after the date of the case, effectively making it impossible for her to comply with the case plan because she was not referred to or given access to appropriate therapy. And that reasonable efforts finding led to the abuse of discretion in the finding of a statutory basis, that finding that while reasonable efforts were being made, they failed to correct the conditions that led to the problem.
Could we just clarify for the record the timeline? It's my understanding that when the referral was eventually made for trauma-informed therapy, that was in about January, and the trial started that summer, June or July?
The referral was made, it was initially made in March of 23, not recommended until October. So there wasn't, referral capacity assessment made a recommendation.
Right. But October, but then the trial is the following summer?
Trial would have been that earlier that year, or earlier, not in the summer, because it
I'm sorry.
365 days.
I'm sure I have the date here. So, well, I have trial began in June 2024.
It was continued for various reasons, but it was that was beyond the 300 days.
Okay, but all I'm trying to get at is how much time was there between the start of trial and when she was actually referred to the trauma-informed therapy? So we're talking from October 2023 to June 2024, 6, 7, 8 months.
Correct.
Okay, that's it.
So that she had that access to that therapy at the end of the phase after we had already passed the deadline. The finding that failure to correct the conditions that led to the at-home placement, while reasonable efforts were being made, is an error because of the finding of reasonable efforts that the therapy was made. Any finding that the agency made reasonable efforts to be unified when they were not appropriately referring client to the trauma-informed therapy that's necessary and recommended by the counsel. It's a failure of reason.
Okay, but the district court recognized, based on the testimony of two different witnesses, that the county did not immediately make that referral because the initially assigned worker disagreed with it. So the court recognized that. The court also recognized that that cost her some time on her case plan. So it sounds like it cost her, like, when was the assessment?
In March.
March to October, she didn't get the referral. The district court said, nonetheless, based on all of the other circumstances, I still think this was a reasonable case plan, reasonable services. Do you have any case law that says a delay in a recommended service in and of itself compels a finding that efforts were unreasonable?
I cannot point the court to specific. What I can point to is the juxtaposition of the findings being contradictory. The court found, acknowledged that
And still said, but in light of all these other things, including that I'm hearing from witnesses that she's just sort of checking boxes and going through the motion, she's not really able to articulate, even on the witness stand, what she's learned and how it would impact her parenting skills going forward. I don't know that would have made a difference. So I think the findings, the efforts were reasonable. Why can't a court do that? That's the court weighing all of the circumstances and not simply saying, well, there was a delayed referral, therefore efforts were unreasonable. There might be a case where you'd say that, but it's not as if the judge ignored that circumstance, didn't acknowledge how it impacted mother in terms of time to work her case plan, and nonetheless made its determination.
I would argue, Your Honor, respectfully, that the other circumstances that were applied were that they lacked foundation and that they recognize that the record may be really the flaws in the psychological assessment of the child and the contradictions of the first parental capacity assessment to the second one, contradictory testimony of the
what contradiction between the two parenting assessments?
The recommendation that was made by the first assessor was one moment. It was the finding essentially that had she had trauma-informed therapy, that she would have made progress, and the second one finding that her contradictory is not the appropriate word, found that she hadn't made any progress in perhaps. Second parental capacity assessment, the facts that were found were based on the failure of the recommendation. Had she, it's all follow chain of events. Had she had appropriate therapy in the first place, she wouldn't make it. The second assessor defined that she hadn't made progress is not the fault of the client. It was without appropriate therapy.
Okay, but you're saying, had she received the referral, she would have made progress.
You would have at least had the opportunity.
Okay.
Which is what
it's a difference. Yes, yes.
But that's what reasonable efforts are about, is giving someone the opportunity.
Okay, but didn't she have the opportunity then in October and from October to June, and as the trial continued and was delayed, she had 8 months.
And this is where we run up again, and I argue too that the parent should be taken an opportunity to come. And my client's position is she's in a much better position. The assessment was but that because of the timelines in place, they were forced into this position without any, and timelines are invisible. I recognize that. That's had she had more time after she got the referral to work the plan, she had less than a year that she would have had.
Who at trial said, now that she's in trauma-informed therapy, she's really demonstrating different qualities and an understanding of how her choices have impacted the child? Because the findings I read and the testimony I reviewed were, yeah, she's going to stuff, but she's not incorporating this. She's not developing insights into parenting, into her child's needs, into the safety issues. So why do you say if she had received more time with the trauma-informed therapist, she would have improved?
I can't guarantee that she would.
Okay, did anybody, okay, but that's what you're arguing, so.
What I'm saying is that the agency failed.
Understood.
Didn't she disagreed with the appropriateness of the therapy, though, for a time? Is that not true?
The appellant yeah. did not disagree with the appropriateness of the therapy, in my understanding, and I was not the attorney at the district court level. My understanding is that it was being a caseworker. That's why you're wrong. That is also an issue that should have affected the district decision because the police worker was totally unqualified to make that determination.
But that was a case manager's. It was a case manager's testimony. Said the and the guardian ad litem's testimony. Okay.
There were other issues regarding the best interest finding. After the trial and visit with the child had ended, child evidence and had been brought back. The court abused its discretion in giving them the testimony. Contravailing interest to the client to visit it pre-adoptive placement. So,
but we don't, we defer to credibility determinations. We don't reweigh the evidence. How could we reverse by saying the district court gave undue influence to testimony regarding the reasons for the child's behavior after the visit?
The not just the foster provider testimony, but the child's psychological value.
I understand, but you're asking for us to make our own determination about what witnesses should have been believed and how their testimony should have been weighed by the fact finder, aren't you?
I am asking the court to look at the specific fact finding and whether discretion is made. I don't believe that it's a matter of credibility when it comes to evaluation of a pre-verbal child and a being made that headbanging and self-injurious behavior was directly correlated to spending a month with child. There is a long argument to be made about that behavior being behavior being caused by the removal, the initial removal and the end.
Was that evidence presented to the district court?
It was presented to the psychologist who was there to test. She did not opine that. The other statutory bases, but granted it only takes one statutory basis to be found, but the other statutory bases that the district court found for termination were not supported by findings in the record. And again, I argue that the basis of failure to correct the conditions of a home placement relates back to the reasonable efforts finding.
No, I don't. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just remember your name for the record. Well, I'm sure you remember your name. Please remember to state your name for the record.
You see it already? Yeah.
Good morning, Your Honor. That's really. On February 2nd, 2023, Lissouer County Department of Human Services.
Or the county.
Well, we can just call them county.
That works.
Enough with the acronyms.
Received a report that appellant's middle child has been sustained by DJV, that sustained left bruises. As such, immediate custody was requested of DJV Jr. When law enforcement arrived at appellant's house, custody of BJB Jr. Despite BJB outburst, Jr. exhibited a lack. On April 13, 2023, BJB was adjudicated as a child in need of protection services. As part of the adjudication, appellant testified that she has a history of dating violent partners and that DJB's criminal history aligned with her previous choices to become romantically involved with abusive men. Throughout the life of this case, three case plans were proposed by the Seward County, filed, approved, and court ordered. Prior to the case plan being filed with the court, the assigned social worker met with the appellant to ensure that she understood each component. To answer any questions, each case plan was then signed by the appellant. On October 25, 2023, due to appellant's perceived compliance with her case plan, a trial hold was started. At the time, appellant indicated that she had not had contact with DJB since March or April of 2023.
Okay. Counsel, I'm going to interrupt you just because we're very familiar with the facts. We've all had an opportunity to read the district court's order. It's very thorough and review the record. So could you address for us the three arguments that opposing counsel is making? First, that the record doesn't provide clear and convincing support for the conclusion that a termination round was proved.
Do you want me to go to the best interest as appellant
first? No, let's talk about, did you establish a statutory basis for TPR?
Perfect. So the district court found that appellant had substantially, continuously, and repeatedly refused or neglected with the duties imposed upon her by the parent and child relationship. In re the child of PT and AT stands for the premise that as a parent, appellant has a duty to provide appropriate care for a child and to protect them from harm. The district court, as part of its order, found that in the fall of 2023, appellant had in many ways regressed, that despite provided services, appellant could not provide specifics on what she had learned throughout the case and what completing a task. And that completing a task or a service and getting something out of it are two different things. To the current capacity evaluation held in October, Mr. Coates testified that appellant was excited to tell him about the progress that she had made, that she had graduated from therapy, which, as the facts lay out, is contrary to those facts. The district court found that appellant's continued contact with DJB fit her past pattern involving child protection, insofar as she would choose these violent men over the health and safety of her children. From the outset of the case, Seward County was primarily concerned with the safety of appellant's children, and due to her continued contact with DJB, lying about those contacts, the child's safety could not be ensured at the time of trial.
So the district court concluded that mother wasn't meeting the needs of the child. Okay. How about the reasonable efforts determination? You've heard the argument of opposing counsel that there was this delay in referring to trauma-informed therapy and that we, or the district court, therefore, should have found that reasonable efforts were lacking. Would you like to address that?
Yes, Your Honor. So at the time of trial on June 21, 2024, the child had been in out-of-home placement since February 8th, only interrupted by the short trial home visit in October and November 13, 2023. Throughout the life of the case, the district court approved the three out-of-home placement plans without modification in order that they be complied with. District court found that since the child's removal, appellant had been provided with sufficient time to engage meaningfully in provided services, but that she had failed to demonstrate a serious intention to modify her behavior.
Do you think that this would have been a different case had this delay occurred, but at the time of trial, mother was showing that therapy was really, she was having a lot of success in therapy, that it looked like she was gaining insights. Do you think that that would be a different fact pattern or situation that we have here with regard to reasonable efforts? And if so, do you think that the district court has sort of supported within their order this notion that while there might have been a delay, the fact that mother has sort of made these jumps means that the efforts were reasonable at the time of trial.
So I think to the first part of your question, I do think the case would have been different. I mean, the facts illustrate that, you know, appellant was dishonest with the court, her attorney, the social workers, the guardian ad litem with her contact with DJB in October of 2023. She subsequently had contact with DJB in April of 2024. So I think...
I mean, does that go to the therapy question, though? I mean...
I think not necessarily, no. I think she was in therapy, whether it wasn't the trauma-informed therapy recommended, but she's still in a form of
judgment. But do you, I mean, I'm trying to get at is I don't think that you're disagreeing that it was the county's fault that she wasn't in trauma-informed therapy initially. So I think the question that we have to resolve is whether that delay means that the county didn't engage in reasonable efforts. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that there's not a lot of indication at the time of trial that the trauma-informed therapy has changed her perspective with regard to her partner, with regard to the concerns that the county had, and that this might be a different case if she'd had only this short window of therapy, but it really looked like she was making leaps and bounds once she was placed in the correct treatment.
So, Ellen was referred to trauma-informed therapy in January of 2024. He subsequently had contact with DJB in April. So as such, any delay in services, I do not think would change the appellant's outlook. I think the issue with appellant was despite these...
We're looking at the reasonable efforts prong, which is, has the county done enough up to the time of trial to try to reunify? And so if the problem was she hadn't been able to fully complete her program because the county had delayed her starting the correct program, then we would be in a different circumstance, right? I mean, yeah, I understand that the primary concern here is the fact that appellant has continued to have contact with her former partner. But I think that the reasonable efforts determination is slightly different, right? It's what has the county done to try to assist her?
So I would argue that, you know, there were three case plans. They're outlined in my brief. You know, the first case plan was complete a parental capacity evaluation, complete a diagnostic assessment, submit to random meetings, maintain independent housing. I don't think focusing solely on the trauma-informed therapy as a reasonable effort failed by the county. I think the county was providing a slew of services, and yes, there was a delay in this trauma-informed therapy, but as I mentioned before, she was in therapy. By October, she had quote-unquote graduated from therapy. But I don't know if I'm answering your question. Your Honor. But I do think that the county did provide reasonable services. As I said, there was a bit of a delay. Whether that delay cost her some time, yes. Ultimately, I don't think it would have changed the outlook of this case. I think throughout the life of the case, Appellant did not internalize any of the services that she was being provided. And it was through that she continued to have contact with DG. Continue to lie about it because she knew that it would look detrimental to me.
And the two contacts that were reported were incidents where he engaged in violent behavior with members of the public.
Absolutely.
How about the best interest determination of the district court? Counsel says the best interest determination is faulty. What's your response?
So I would disagree with that. The trial court found in analyzing the factors in the matter of the welfare of the child, RPE, those three factors are the child's interest, the parent's interest, any competing interest of the child. To the first element, the District Court found that the child was too young to be able to verbally express any preference, or to what extent he wished to maintain a relationship with appellants, therefore that factor to be neutral. The second element, the court found that appellant desired to maintain a parent-child relationship. However, it was unclear whether she believed that any of her children throughout various child protection matters had experienced trauma while in her care, and that her dishonesty was part of a larger narrative which put her and her child on opposite sides of preserving a parent-child relationship. As noted in the record, concerns were raised both by the social workers and the guardian ad litem, their belief that the termination of appellant's parental rights was in the child's best interest, in addition to her lack of insights and ability to take responsibility for her own behavior, which led to the child's initial removal, was more than sufficient to outweigh maintaining the parent-child relationship. Case law notes that, the district court noted that the child's and appellant's interests diverge and that the child's interests must predominate. To the reasonable efforts, I have addressed that already. In the matter of the welfare of JP, he finds that the critical issue is not whether the parent formally complied with the case plan, but rather whether the parent is presently able to assume the responsibilities of the parent and the child. At a time of trial in June 21, 2024, appellant simply was not presently able to assume the responsibilities. District Court found that Osura County had made reasonable efforts, exercised due diligence to prevent the foster placement, offered services that were timely, available, relevant, and culturally appropriate. The court noted that the reasonable efforts were outlined as part of detailed case plans, which were tailored to appellants with the resources necessary to provide a safe environment for her children and to correct the conditions which led to home placement. Your Honors, respondent Osura County respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's amended findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order for termination of parental rights filed on September 5, 2024. If the court has no additional questions.
Thank you very much. Ms. Thompson, do you have any rebuttal to the state's argument?
Thank you. As counsel just stated, reasonable efforts are meant to be timely and relevant. The question of timeliness has been raised and dealt with. Whether they were appropriate, I think, is the primary issue here. The effects of trauma cannot be overstated, as we know from adverse childhood experiences. The effects of domestic violence on the child, but also the victim, the primary victim, cannot be overstated, the effects of that. Falling oneself out of a violent relationship is a Herculean effort. And without, that's how this case opened, because of domestic violence. Without the agency making the appropriate recommendation for her to overcome her childhood trauma, to heal her tendency to be with violent partners, how on earth was a parent supposed to make that jump herself?
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
The parental capacity assessment is May or March?
March.
Okay. And the referral doesn't happen until October. Between those two events, there were court hearings?
Yes.
Okay. And the case plan was presented to the district court, and I assume the district court at some point was given the parental capacity assessment or a report that it had been completed, and these were the recommendations?
Yes.
Did mother complain to the district court that despite the recommendation of the parental capacity assessor for trauma-informed therapy, the county was refusing to refer her to such therapy?
Again, I did not represent the district court level. I don't know what conversation.
But a client is fair, is allowed in court to say, look, this is a service I need. It's a service that was recommended. They're saying they're not going to give it to me. Order them to give it to me.
And this decision was clearly made by the caseworker.
I understand that. But ultimately, it's the court's decision. And what I'm getting at is, you know, there's case law that talks about, you know, you can't complain about services you didn't have if you didn't bring it to the court's attention and say, I want these services, I need these services. What I'm asking is, can you point us to anything in the record that says mother asked for these services, or was mother willing to kind of go along with what was set up instead? And you're not faulting her, but I mean, to say it's unreasonable, I mean, I'm wondering, what was the district court's reaction to, well, I'm looking at the assessment, here's the recommendation, we're not doing this, why aren't we doing it? Did that happen?
I don't know whether the client ever specifically did the recommendation. However, I would argue that I have had clients in domestic violence situations. So to expect a woman with a significant, about 30-year-old history of trauma and a significant past of aligning herself with violent abusers to raise her voice and make that argument for herself.
Well, she had a lawyer, right?
She did have a lawyer. I don't know whether counsel made that argument off the record or not. But I will say that as the recognized professionals who are tasked with providing appropriate services, a caseworker knew enough to make that recommendation and refused. Ms. Gilster came on later and saw that recommendation and enforced it. So it lied to the feet of that original caseworker who refused to make that recommendation because she, without any basis in knowledge or experience, found it inappropriate. Ms. Gilster been on the case and counsel acknowledged too, this may have been a very different case all along had that referral been made timely. And Ms. Gilster been the worker from the beginning, this might be a totally different case. And that's what reasonable efforts afford the opportunity.
At trial, what was the evidence from the trauma-informed therapist who had then been working with mother for 8 months?
I believe it was stated that she was not absorbing material. And the argument to that, again, is long. Thank
absolutely
you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you both. This case is subject to an expedited deadline. It's submitted, and you'll have our decision within that 45-day deadline.
Thank you.